This is the Future of HR Podcast, episode 143.
Many times, not to disparage our profession, but we're very much enraptured by all these great ideas that are HR related. The business people want to know what's going to help them be more effective at achieving their goals and hitting their metrics. I think our job is being able to understand the business so well that we can translate those HR practices and we can translate those HR concepts into actionable items for that front line. And the only way you can do that is to get embedded in the business in such a way that you understand it as well as the business operates. And I would tell the next gen, and I would tell my team, and I do tell my team, very first thing is you have to be a business professional first. If you think about, well, what would you like to be remembered as? I'd like to be remembered as a business professional who had HR expertise.
What does it mean to be a business leader with HR expertise? How can you reinforce and shape a people-first culture at scale? Hi, I'm your host, JP Elliott, and this is the Future of HR Podcast, the only podcast whose mission is to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. On each episode, I interview successful HR executives and thought leaders who are reimagining, rethinking, and leading our field into the future. During our candid conversations, you will learn about their career journeys, their lessons learned along the way, and their insights on how to take our field, and most importantly, your career to the next level. If you're really serious about becoming a more business-focused and strategic HR leader, then you need to make attending my Next Gen HR Accelerator program a part of your 2025 development plan. And if you're a CHRO who wants your HR team to have even more influence and business impact, then you're going to want to send your team to my Next Gen HR Accelerator program as well. Because my Next Gen HR Accelerator program is a best-in-class leadership development program specifically designed to equip high-potential HR talent with the skills, mindset, and tools they need to become strategic business leaders and value creators. Over four intensive weeks, you'll build your business acumen and financial acumen. You'll sharpen your strategic thinking, elevate your executive influence and communication skills, and learn how to translate business strategy to HR initiatives that deliver impact and value. You'll also get targeted feedback and coaching to help you grow as a leader. As every Next Gen HR Accelerator participant receives 360 feedback, personal coaching from me, and leaves with a targeted from-to development plan. That is why one past participant said the Next Gen HR Accelerator program completely transformed their approach to HR. Over the past year, over 100 HR leaders have been through the program from companies like Verizon, McDonald's, Nike, Prudential, Pacific Life, Hershey, Kohler, and many more. Our next cohort starts September 9th and registration is now open. Space is limited and we expect to sell out. To learn more about the Next Gen HR Accelerator program, go to futureofhr.com or reach out to me directly to learn more. And with that, I'm excited to say that this week's podcast is a very special conversation with Tim Hourigan. Why is this a special conversation? Well, after nearly 23 years of service, Tim has announced he'll be retiring effective June 6, 2025, after leading human resources for the Home Depot since 2017. And while he may be hanging up his orange apron to start his next chapter, he certainly has a lot to be proud of. Over his tenure, Tim and his leadership team have strived to create a best-in-class environment for the more than 470,000 orange-blooded associates who work at the company. Whether in a retail store, a distribution center, a customer contact center, or a store support center, his team's focus has been on reinforcing the company's inverted pyramid leadership model and ensuring decisions are taken in line with the core values gifted to the company by its founders. And Home Depot's focus on creating a people-first culture is visible throughout their value wheel, which guides their decision-making, and their inverted leadership pyramid, which puts customers and frontline associates at the top of the pyramid, meaning everyone else is there to support them. If you want to learn more about this amazing model, I put a link to Home Depot's website that talks about this in the show notes. And as you will hear Tim share, giving back is one of Home Depot's core values, and the company's focus on supporting U.S. veterans, and has built or improved over 50,000 veteran homes and facilities, all done by Home Depot volunteers. And it's this people-first culture that's helped Home Depot to grow from two stores in 1978 to 2,347 stores with $159 billion in revenue and over 470,000 associates. And of course, Tim has played a significant role in helping the Home Depot to grow over his 23 years with the company. In fact, before becoming the Executive Vice President of HR, he served as the president of the company's Southern Division, where he was responsible for the sales and operations of more than 690 stores, leading a team of more than 100,000 associates in 15 U.S. states, Puerto Rico, and St. Thomas. Outside of Home Depot, giving back is also something that's important to Tim, as he serves on the boards of a number of industry and human resource professional organizations. It was an incredible honor to sit down with Tim to learn more about his incredible career and his business-focused approach to HR. I know you're going to learn a lot as we discussed how a curiosity for the people side of business changed the course of Tim's career, why HR leaders should strive to be business professionals with HR expertise and not the other way around, how Home Depot's iconic value wheel and inverted leadership pyramid guides the company's people-first culture, the power of storytelling to build and reinforce culture, and why he believes as HR evolves, we should not forget that human and human resources and much, much more. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this episode as you listen, so drop me a line on LinkedIn and say hello. And now let's jump into my conversation with Tim. Tim, welcome to the Future of HR podcast. How are you?
I'm doing well, JP. Thanks for having me. I'm honored to be here.
Oh, we're honored to have you on the podcast. It's just great to spend some time with you. You've had an amazing career at Home Depot and done a lot of great things while you're there. I love how business focused you are, and I'm excited to dig into your career, your advice for next gen HR leaders, and a lot more than that. You started your career as a CPA.
Yes, sir.
That is an accountant, I believe, right?
Yes, it is.
And before transitioning to HR, so tell us more about what sparked the interest in the people side of the business and how you made that transition from accountant to HR.
That's a great question. I was doing some financial analysis with the company that I was working with on a divestiture. And I was a pretty junior accountant at the time, and I was working in this clandestine operation. We were coming in on weekends and working through the various aspects of the sale and the divestiture. And I thought we were done when I finished my work. All the accounting work was done. All the analysis was done of the purchase price, et cetera. The HR lead started digging into things that said, oh, but we've got much more to do. And I became intrigued. I was like, well, I thought we were done. And he goes, oh, no, you don't understand. And he explained, he was the senior HR leader of the company at the time. And he took me through the significant amount of issues around retention and motivation. And we're going to announce the sale. The subsidiaries were up for sale, but we've got to keep them focused and drive the business or we lose the monetary value of it. Long story short, I got intrigued. So after the divestiture, and this was with a company called Gimbel Saks Retailing Corporation. So we owned the Gimbel's department store, Saks Fifth Avenue, et cetera. And we were selling off about 18 nameplates, which includes today people probably most familiar with Kohl department stores. And that was part of the company at the time. All those things going on, I said, this is interesting. And I started picking his brain. Shortly thereafter, he called me up to his office and said, do you want to go to London and work at the Group Management Education Center, which was based in the south of England? I said, I don't know anything about that. I'm a Kentucky boy, JP. I've never been out of Kentucky. When you say you want to go to London, I'm thinking London, Kentucky. And that's not what he was talking about. I spent 2 years on the staff leading a management education effort for a company called BAT Industries, which is a worldwide multinational conglomerate. That's when I transitioned from finance into the HR world.
Wow. So it really led with you being curious and saying, I did my job, but what else is here? And you thought it was over. And they said, no, there's a lot more. And you were like, you pulled the thread and said, tell me more about what's going on and why this is so complex. And then he saw something in you, it sounds like, to say, let's try this HR thing.
I don't know exactly what he saw, but he must have seen something. And I tell you, it was a great experience. I spent 2 years there. I learned so much, not only about transitioning into HR, and I had a tutor from a university called Cranfield, spent a day a month with that person trying to help me understand the fundamentals of HR. But the most important piece was we had operations in over 90 different countries. And I met so many people from so many different places. And I learned, people talk today in the phrase double click. Well, this is double click and then double clicking yet again. And understanding how important company cultures were and how the variations across the globe work together in a different way, but with a similar or same outcome. And that was just purely fascinating.
You were there for about 2 years, you said, but it sounds like you just learned a ton from different cultures, different responsibilities about HR. I mean, were you traveling around the world a little bit as well and having the opportunity just to meet different folks? How did that change the Kentucky boy?
Picture a Kentucky boy flying into Entebbe, which is in Uganda. And the only thing you knew about Entebbe is the movie Raid on Entebbe, when the Israelis went in and had to free some hostages. As I'm landing in Entebbe, spelt out on the side of the mountainside is Entebbe. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I'm supposed to be going to Kampala, which is the capital. Entebbe's the airport. And I'm saying, oh my goodness, take this boy back to the bluegrass state. There's something here different. But that was probably the most exotic trip, and I could go into detail, but won't. Spent time in Asia, spent time in South America, spent time obviously throughout the continent in Europe, in addition to coming back to the U.S.
Well, it sounds like it really helped broaden you, really gave you new perspectives and helped you understand the impact of people and HR. Yeah. And you learned a lot. And I think that's one of those proving experiences early in your career that really formed you. But if we jump forward a little bit more, we fast forward to a critical point. You join Home Depot and you're leading HR for the Southern Division, which is pretty big. You could probably tell me how big a Southern Division is in terms of revenue, but you got a call to take on a new role. Tell us about that call and what that role came with it.
Actually, at the time, I was leading HR for the whole country. I had the HR responsibilities for the U.S. operations. I got a call to take over the P&L leadership role for the Southern Division. And the Southern Division consisted of about 700 stores, 100,000 associates, and top line volume of about $30 billion. Pretty good size operation. It was one of three divisions that we have in the U.S. And I'd always aspired to a P&L role. Back to the earlier discussion, there's three things in business that you need to understand well to be effective. I think you have to understand the financial, the lingua franca of the business. You have to understand how the finances come together and how the business connects. The second piece is you have to understand how to motivate and inspire people. And then the third piece, frankly, is the business itself. The first two are fundamental, and they cross businesses. They cross industries. And I do believe you can learn the business easier than you could learn those first two. It was intentional from my perspective to get that people component and to get the financial component and then be able to transition into a business leadership role. Surprisingly, the CEO and the lady that was heading the operations in the U.S. at the time agreed. They gave me the opportunity then to lead the division. It was an amazing experience. I had 100,000 folks, as I mentioned, that you're trying to figure out how do you do what's in their best interest. And so you can move them beyond compliance to commitment. How do you get that extra discretionary effort when you need it and somebody's not there pushing them to do it? They just do it on their own because they feel empowered and they feel that they're making a difference. That was an unbelievably great experience to have.
It's an amazing experience. I mean, $30 billion would put you, if that was a standalone company, would put you in the Fortune 500 easily. Make you a CEO. As you took that role on, were there things you were concerned about initially where you're like, what was the onboarding for you and feeling you knew the people side? Did you feel like you knew the business well enough just to step in that role? And were you confident doing that?
Outwardly, yes. Inwardly, not so much. Whenever I visit stores and whenever we talk about the business, I always tried to take the business lens. People were much more interested in telling me about how the business worked and what were some of the challenges. And from a customer standpoint, what were some of the things we're trying to drive connectivity or loyalty? From an inventory management standpoint, how we're trying to move product into the store. I figure the operations teams were much more interested in that than me talking about, well, this is how we do assessment centers, and here's how we do things relative to performance management, and here's three or four options, and here's why we selected this one. They may have been interested in that, but they were much more interested in telling me about how the business worked. With that background, whenever I visited stores, frankly, I tried to pride myself on, they didn't know I was the HR person. I understood about inventory movement. I understood about on-shelf availability and how critical that was to the business success. I understood how we were looking at our customer metrics and how we were measuring that. Yes, I had the HR pieces in the back of my mind, and I'm trying to translate in my head. These are the HR challenges that maybe we could do a little bit better. But when I went into the role, this is an executive coming in from the store support centers, what we call our corporate offices, not a person from HR coming in to talk to us about the people stuff. I felt it was so integrated. When I moved into the division president role, I had a pretty good foundation on how the business worked. And the second thing, and did it from day one, is I knew that the team knew much more about each aspect than I did. So my merchandising support leaders on my team, I leveraged them. I relied on their input. Same way with operational support people and all the different aspects of how we run the business.
Yeah, that's really helpful. And obviously you were a business person first, HR person second. They saw that. And that's why it made sense to put you in that role. But it's still a really big role. And I think a couple of things really served you well. One, like you said, you show up, people think you're a business person. You're part of the team. You are not separate. And I think that is something, it's a pet peeve of mine when I hear HR start talking about the business, like the business is over there. Like, well, how's the business doing? Or I'm not part of the business. What do you mean? Of course you're part of the business. Maybe you're not in the field of play, but we're certainly helping make sure that we're there to win. And it sounds like you did that for a while. Because people are going to want to ask, I think. So after the P&L role, when did you transition back in to the HR role? And what was that like?
Our CEO at the time, and I had supported him from an HR standpoint to the previous experience, I was for about 15 years. So he and I were very close and knew each other well. And he called me on a Friday. I remember distinctly, he says, I want to let you know that we have a board meeting on Monday where we're going to talk about my predecessor's retiring. And I remember thinking distinctly, well, this is just like Craig. He's calling to let me know that they're going to be a transition, and he didn't want me to read the announcement. He just wanted to tell me that this is happening. And he says, before we go to the board on Monday, though, I thought it'd be important that I better check with you. Do you want the job? And I start laughing. I said, well, Craig, you kind of messed up. This job as a division president is the best job I've ever had. You're making a difference. You're driving business and at the same time helping people fulfill their dreams. This was great. Of course, I said, whatever you need me to do, and I'd be honored to be able to fulfill the role as head of HR for the company. I didn't see it coming at the time, and I loved what I was doing. That is probably the most enjoyable role for many, many reasons.
Yeah, it sounds like it was an amazing role, but I love the fact that you're humble enough that you didn't even see it coming, and you were kind of like, wait, me? Oh, great, you know? And of course, you took the role. And Tim, you've had a really esteemed career. You've made a huge difference. I'm really just appreciative of you being on the podcast to share your learnings, especially around just being a business leader. I think that's something we're all continuing to work on in HR. But you also have announced you're retiring from Home Depot. And the podcast will actually come out right around when you are retiring. So I wanted you to think back a little bit. And what advice would you have for HR professionals and next-gen HR leaders on how to make a difference in their career, and what really matters as you reflect on just an amazing career at Home Depot?
Great question, JP. And for me, I go back to the advice my very first HR leader gave me. And he was the gentleman that sent me to London, by the way. His name was Tony Hall, great business person. And he said exactly this: focus on learning the business. Roll up your sleeves. If it's an outside sales group, ride with the salespeople. Find out as much as you possibly can about what their job is. Then figure out what you could do from an HR standpoint to help. That served me well. That was in 1987. I've been trying to practice that. And I think of Tony daily when I get involved in something. It's like, learn the business first. And the more you can do that, the more effective you can be in your HR support role. Many times, not to disparage our profession, we're very much enraptured by all these great ideas that are HR related. The business people want to know what's going to help them be more effective at achieving their goals and hitting their metrics. I think our job is being able to understand the business so well that we can translate those HR practices and we can translate those HR concepts into actionable items for that front line. And the only way you can do that is to get embedded in the business in such a way that you understand it as well as the business operator. And I would tell the next gen, and I would tell my team, and I do tell my team, very first thing is you have to be a business professional first. If you think about, well, what would you like to be remembered as? I'd like to be remembered as a business professional who had HR expertise. That to me would be a great moniker. You talk about the epitaph, and you talk about how do people think about you when you're gone. If they say that, then I made Tony proud, which is very important for me, for the next gen and for this gen and for the third gen past the next gen. If you can think of it in that way, you're a business professional who happens to have HR expertise. You're going to win. The business is going to win, and you'll truly drive the synergies that you need to.
Tim, I think that is timeless advice, and it's so important. And I love the way you said that around an HR, a business professional with HR expertise is a great way to say that. And that's so important. And the closer we are to the business, the more credibility we have, the more opportunities we see where we can have impact. And really, I think we get more committed to making sure we are focused on helping because we feel like we're part of it. We're no longer talking about the business. We're like, I'm in the business. Sometimes COEs have a little more difficult time with this. If you're an HR business partner, you're in the meetings, you're seeing the decisions coming down, and COE leaders need to also embrace this. For me, this is not just HR professionals. I think it's across the board. You've got to get closer to the business and learn the business first.
I agree 100%. And the most effective leaders, COE or business partner, are those that understand the business so well that when they speak, and if I'm a compensation COE executive, and I link, here's why we've developed the MIP-CLAM metrics in this way. It drives credibility with the business partner themselves who says, they actually understand what we do. And they're more apt to seek you out for counsel than if they think, well, yes, there's 15 different concepts we've considered, and here's the answer, without linking it to, and this is why it makes sense for us.
Yeah, the context of that business is critical for credibility. Switching gears a little bit, one of the things about Home Depot and the Home Depot's founders, they created a really strong people-first culture. In your experience, what are some of the practices that have been most effective in preserving this culture throughout the organization's growth over the years? I mean, everyone's got the orange apron. It's iconic. And I think you guys have been an iconic people-first company. But as you've grown, it's really challenging to do. But you guys have maintained that. How have you done that?
It's work in process. The phrase, it's a destination you never achieve. I think that is how we have that mindset. And we have to drive the culture every day. I go back to Bernie Marcus and Arthur Blank set up the company in the late 70s. It was a new concept, a new business. And they started it with, and I heard Arthur say this a number of times, and this is kind of resonates with me. We're here to solve problems and fulfill dreams. He was talking about the customers, and customers come in and they have a water heater that's leaking. They have a faucet that's not working. They have a problem they need to be fixed. There's another time a customer comes in and they're trying to fulfill a dream. They're expecting their first child and they want to paint the nursery. They're having a vision of what their backyard could look like, and they're building a patio, and they've got the vision of entertaining friends and family, and they've got a dream. That's the same thing we do for people. When I think about it, we solve problems. People coming in, they need financial support, obviously. They need healthcare benefits. They need things that help them deal with their day-to-day Maslow's first level of hierarchy of needs, right? But what they really get is, what's the promise? What's the potential? How could you help them fulfill the dream? And for some people, it may be hierarchical growth. For some people, it may be they feel part of a winning team and they feel that, hey, I'm proud to put on that apron because I feel part of something that's doing things in our community or doing things for others that make a difference in their lives. With that foundation for us, it's like, how do you repeat that? What we found effective is we tell stories. And we tell stories of executives that started, and our second most senior executive is a lady named Anne-Marie Campbell. Anne-Marie emigrated from Jamaica 40 years ago and joined Home Depot as a part-time cashier. Today, she's the senior executive vice president. She runs all of U.S. operations, Canada, and Mexico. She has responsibility for plus or minus 400,000 people. And you talk to her and you say, how did a female from Jamaica come into pretty much a male-dominated industry, home improvement, a lot of professional customers, et cetera. How did she succeed? And that's a dream that she's able to then share with people. A lady on my team who actually heads culture today is named Crystal Hamlin. Crystal started 40 years ago, May 6th, I think, is going to be her 40th anniversary. Same story, part-time cashier. Joined the company, had people put their arm around her and say, hey, listen, Crystal, you can make a career of this. And she tells the story. No, I'm going to be a physical therapist. Give us a track. 40 years later, she's a senior vice president. She ran the Northern division when I ran the Southern. And she does like to point out that her division was about 30% bigger than mine. And she performed exceptionally well for like 8 years running that division. A couple just the quick examples of how do you keep the culture going? What you point to people that are reflections of that culture. Not only did we solve problems, everyone came to Home Depot, they had to pay bills, but we fulfilled dreams. We helped people unlock potential that they didn't even see inside themselves. To me, that's what makes it an ongoing focus of us. And our intention is to how do we keep doing that? And telling those stories, I think it makes a lot of difference.
Those are inspirational stories and incredible stories, actually, in the same time. But yet, I bet if we really started talking about the 500,000 associates at Home Depot, there are hundreds and thousands of stories of people moving up to run, you know, take on and grow their career, right? Because it's such an amazing, incredible company. And I think that's one of the things I love about your industry and other industries like it, where you can't start as an hourly person and work your way up into management and make a career out of it. If you're motivated and you want to learn the business, the storytelling is so powerful. That's amazing, Tim.
And JP, you say that when I was a division president, every time I go to a store, I had two questions I would ask, and I still do today. If it's a long tenured associate and we wear a badge that says how many years we've worked for the company. If you go in the store, you'll see associates with different numbers, 10, 15, 6, 1, whatever it happens to be. And if I saw a long tenured associate, I'd always ask them on those days when it was hard to get out of bed, says, what the heck am I doing here? What got you out of bed and made you come in? And for the more junior tenured associates, those that might be 0, 1, or 2 year tenure badges, I'd say, you could have gone anywhere. Why did you come to us? And what was it that drew you here? And the beauty for me, and I heard this after you talked to thousands of people, literally all across the Southern Division, which is where I have my responsibilities, you heard one message. I can't let the team down. If I don't show up, then the team doesn't fulfill what they're supposed to do. Or others would say, well, this is a family. We take care of each other. We're in some tough markets, as you would expect. And you see associates in those markets, and they find that the store is a place where they can find comfort and solace. It's kind of an oasis. And they said, this is important. In many cases, they've started as what we call a lot associate. And those are the folks that help customers load product into their cars and bring carts in. And you go, well, how can that be fulfilling? And I'll tell you a quick story. There's a guy named Victor down in Davie, Florida. Been with us 14 years. He's been a lot associate for 14 years. And when I'm talking to him, I said, Victor, and by the way, the guy was great. I was watching him in the store. He's helping customers, running around, taking things out. He goes, this is the most important job in the company. I talk to every customer when they're putting stuff in their car, and I find out if they found everything they needed. And if they didn't, I go back in and tell the team that we need to help this lady or help this gentleman because they need something. And I'd write down of the professional contractors, I write down phone numbers and addresses of new trucks I've seen in the lot. And I give it to our pro salespeople and tell them, hey, I haven't seen this car. They're in an electrical department. You need to talk to them about seeing if we can get more of their electrical business. The guy was with us 14 years at the time. And you go, what motivates that? It's because they feel part of something bigger. They're so inspirational for me. That's then as you tell those stories and you find others then that want to add on their story. I know it sounds very unorganized, but there's something that knits the fabric together. That's what I think is one of the key drivers that's enabled us to maintain the culture for all these years.
Those stories are so powerful. And those associates make a huge difference. I mean, Victor's making a huge difference. I guarantee people go there, want to see Victor, excited to see him, get to know him. And that makes a big difference in why we choose Home Depot over a competitor. And I could honestly say my experience at Home Depot has always been great. I am not handy at all. This is something you cannot do. I can build a PowerPoint deck, but I can't build anything else. And I've tried throughout my life. But when I go into Home Depot, the associates actually make a huge difference because I really need help. I'm really trying to find something that I can't figure out, and they can help explain and how to go do it and do it right. And so I think it's a different level sometimes of expertise that you expect and you really appreciate when you go into like a Home Depot. Versus if I'm buying clothes, I know what the clothes look like. I know my size. I don't need as much support. It's lower risk as I'm trying to do electrical or put a new light fixture in or something, which is always a bad idea if I do that. Thinking about these great stories, Are there other ways you're bringing the culture to life for the associates each and every day? Are there other things you're doing to really make sure that people are feeling that passion and that commitment and knowing what Home Depot is all about?
We have two iconic models. One is what we call our value wheel, and there's eight values on the value wheel. And I'll just highlight one of them. One of them is giving back. Our founders felt it very important that we gave back to our communities. So each store, each district, each region, so as you go up the hierarchy of our organization charts, do things we call Team Depot events. And that's where we go out into the community and we do something in that community to make it better. Our focus is on veterans, and we heavily index our efforts around veterans, especially homeless veterans, and things we can do to help improve the living conditions of veterans whose homes may have deteriorated. We also do things with helping people improve skilled trades. So there's a great shortage in the country today of skilled tradespeople. For every four plumbers that retire, there's one new plumber entering the trade. The average age of a plumber is 56 years old. So there's a huge need. And by the way, plumbers won't be replaced by AI most likely. There's not a technology solution that can come in and fix a leaky faucet. You need someone who has plumbing expertise. So we focus on those efforts and we do training around the skilled trades on a number of initiatives. But the Team Depot event is one that helps drive that connectivity. Every store will do at least one, most do multiple Team Depot events a year. And just recently, we did one here in Atlanta with my team. We had 250 orange t-shirted associates on the west side of Atlanta refurbishing three homes for veterans. And the homes were in disrepair. We were able to go in and help repair some of its cosmetic, most of it a light structure. For the heavy structure stuff, we actually bring professionals in to help us as well because we don't want to get it wrong. But the story along those lines with this one family, fourth generation of military serving our country. The original patriarch bought a home and she wanted it to be the generational home for the family. And then she bought a home next door. These are small homes on the west side of Atlanta. But that was going to be her gift to the future generations. Four generations later, the great-grandkids are living in the house and the houses have fallen into disrepair. So we went in, again, our whole team was in. We did a whole bunch of work with these guys, and we refurbished their homes. We called them to our store manager's meeting, so it would be the daughter, the grandson, and the great-grandson, under the premise of, this is what we do. This is one example. We wanted to share it with our 4,000 attendees at our store manager meeting. What they didn't know, and what we did on stage, is we bought their home, paid off their mortgage for them. And you say, how do you keep it alive?
Wow.
You see that. And by the way, we're doing it across the country. We're building wheelchair ramps in homes so it's accessible. We're doing things to make it more accessible for those that might be in a wheelchair that need to have doors widened or counters lowered. Of our 2,000 plus stores in the U.S., we're doing that every day. Today, we're doing a Team Depot event somewhere in a market that's trying to improve the lives for folks. And then the reflection back internally on, it's one of our eight core values. People, they feel proud that they're able to help. And they see that linkage into what our core values are. The second image is our inverted pyramid leadership model. And if you go into our stores, you'll see the inverted pyramid on the walls. And you'll see this is our value wheel. You'll see this value wheel on everyone's apron. And we do that just to kind of remind all of us that, hey, the values are important. That's the only emblem that's actually imprinted on the apron. There's the Home Depot logo and the value wheel. This is important. This is how we make decisions. It's our value wheel. That's our filter. And this is how we lead. It's that inverted pyramid leadership model.
That's great. And the inverted leadership model is really where the leader is, instead of like on top, they're on bottom. Mm-hmm. So really the leader is more servant leadership, because we're not showing that visually. But that's the way I understand it from my Lean and Six Sigma principles as well.
Whenever I interview a person, and I interview all candidates for officer roles, I always tell them you're about to get demoted if you get this job, because you move down one level on the ladder. And so just realize that you've got more pressure, you're supporting more people, and there's a heavier weight on your shoulders. But make no mistake, you've just been demoted. Feel good about the bigger job and the impact, but this comes with responsibility and accountability. And if you don't think of it in that mindset, if you don't think of it from a humility standpoint, you're missing the picture.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense, especially when you think about who really, at the end of the day, is really delivering for your customers every day. It's your Orange Apron associates, right? They're the ones every day that are making the dreams come true, helping people like me who are clueless and get things done. I love that. I love that you guys really brought that life. I think people talk about that, but I don't think many companies actually put that in place, truthfully. So I think kudos to Home Depot and the leadership team there. Thinking about leadership development as well, Tim, I wanted to talk to you about this because you obviously are a business person who has HR expertise and that business piece and just your time running a P&L. How has that shifted or changed your approach and how you think about developing talent?
I think for me, the focus on developing talent has to be through the lens of how do you enable someone to be better at meeting their commitments from a business standpoint? And for us, the people component is so critical. 95% of our associates work in stores or work in distribution centers. That is our front line. When I think about leadership development, it's how do you understand that? How do you work to build your skills as being a great people leader? To your point, JP, if I sat back and said, I'm running a manufacturing line and it's heavily automated, yes, people are important, but there's much more technology to support. Every one of our interactions in a store is unique. Yes, we have sales process and we have process to stock shelves, et cetera. But each customer, you come in and you go, I'm trying to install a lamp. I've never done that before. What should I think about? Well, that's a different customer than the one that comes in and says, I'm an electrical contractor and I need to find 40 lamps that have these capabilities and these specifications. And I need them to be quick installed and have the extended life time frame because I'm putting it in a multifamily environment. Totally different experiences. And I expect one associate to have the ability to discern what are those critical things. So then I've got to go one level down on the pyramid and say, how does that person get leadership? How are they motivated? How are they given training? How are they getting that reinforced when they do it well? And how are they giving critical feedback so they can improve when they need to? That then goes into a great focus, I think, from our standpoint as we're evolving, is on how do we teach leaders of the future? Historically, we've been really good at teaching people how to operate. We've been really good that this is the process. Here's how you execute the process. Here's the outcome expected. Here are the things you need to, as you get through thresholds and gates and things of that nature, here's what you need to think about. We weren't very good at teaching broader leadership. And really, the pandemic emphasized it in a different way. And we've really doubled down now on how do you teach leaders to lead with empathy? How do you teach leaders to learn about each person in a way that you can figure out how to help motivate them on an individualized basis? How do you teach leaders to deal with the ambiguity that exists and help people build skills that enable them to deal with the ambiguity, not try to provide a prescriptive answer for every possible scenario that could potentially present itself? Those things, as we look forward, that's really what our focus is. And we're trying to do it real time. We've actually put people in market to do that training. We found, yes, virtual training is good. For this type of expertise that you're trying to develop in people, you really need the practice, and the in-person aspect of it is critical to the success. Those are just a couple examples of things that we're trying to do to how do we build that next generation? Only thing we know for sure is it's going to be more uncertain. So how do we help them deal with ambiguity? Do we know that you're going to have to be more empathetic? Frankly, the last piece is, how do we help you build resilience? Historically, we all like to get the A on the test. It's hard to get A's on tests when you don't know what the test questions are. Even while you're taking the test, you may not know what the test questions are.
Yeah, that is really true. And so I love the way you're thinking about that. I think from the idea of practical application of leadership, really being clear of like, how do we help people better at their job is number one. But number two, how do you prepare people for what's next when we don't know what is coming next? I think that is that's fundamentally where we're going, the challenges. Looking back a little bit, thinking about when you first entered the field over your great career, what do you think has really changed and what hasn't changed?
That's a great question. What's changed is obviously just the onslaught of technology and opportunities to use technology to better Empower Associates. Back when I started, it was all paper and pencil. I would have said slide rule, but most people wouldn't know what a slide rule is, so I'll just leave it off to the side. Today, the focus is, yes, we're all very, very adept at using mobile devices. And it actually augments our ability to provide better customer service in the stores and help our associates be more confident by providing them with knowledge about various aspects of their job. That's really cool. That didn't exist when I started. From an HR standpoint specifically, HR people weren't necessarily business partners. Again, it was called personnel or administration. And yes, you put people on payroll and you took people off payroll. That was kind of the big aspect of it. And you go, that is being able to be handled much more effectively through technology these days. It's self-serve. There's so many tools that enable associates to take care of themselves. It's elevated. And the change piece is the business partner concept is so much more important. And frankly, even 15 years ago, people didn't talk about HR business partners. People talked about the HR team, maybe. In fact, it may have been still personnel. That part is changing, and I think it will continue to evolve. I think the one thing that is always going to be the same is you have to be in HR, you have to be the champion of the people. That's become much more critical, especially as and we're in such uncertain times. We talked about the pandemic for a number of years, how we had to deal with that. It was uncertain. You needed to be, as an HR professional, speaking out on behalf of people that weren't in the room when decisions were being taken. And I think that's one that not only has changed, and it's an expectation of your peers and the senior leaders, but I think that becomes much more critical as we move forward. Always remember that our role in the HR world is, yes, we have our expertise, but fundamentally, we're there to help represent the associate or the employee in those discussions when the associate or employee are not in the room. And we have to take that lens, which is slightly different, perhaps, than what others may be taking.
Well said, Tim. Last question for you here. What is one word or phrase that you believe will define the future of HR over the next 5 to 10 years?
That's a lot of pressure.
I know it's a pressure question.
That's a pressure question. The advice, HRs, don't forget the H in HR. Don't forget the human piece in human resources. And I'd say that as I look forward for the next 5 years, AI obviously is going to become much more critical. It's going to become much more staple in our weaponry, so to speak. But don't forget the human piece, especially in businesses that have human connection like we do, and we're touching customers each and every day. The H in HR is an important thing to keep top of mind.
I love that. Tim, thank you so much for being on the podcast. More importantly, congratulations on your retirement. Thank you, sir. All you've done for the profession and all the millions, probably the hundreds of thousands of lives you touched at Home Depot and other places. It's been just an incredible honor to know you and just have you on the podcast today.
Well, JP, thanks for having me. I'm honored to be part of it. And if I can help in any way, please don't hesitate to reach out.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Future of HR Podcast. Congratulations to Tim on his retirement, and thanks to him for sharing his insights on being a business leader with HR expertise and how to build a people-first culture. As always, you can go to futureofhr.com to view all of our past episodes and learn more about our mission to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. And if you're enjoying the Future of HR podcast, then I think you'll enjoy my Future of HR newsletter, which is the only newsletter that's focused on helping HR leaders to elevate their career and business impact. Each week, you get actionable and practical ideas on how you can be an even more business-focused and strategic HR leader. To subscribe, go to futureofhr.com and be sure to download my HR Leaders Blueprint, which is 18 pages of real-world advice from over 100 HR thought leaders with simple, actionable, and proven strategies to advance your career. We'll be back next week with another great conversation with the brightest minds in our field. Thanks again for listening to the Future of HR and being part of our community.